Chapter 52. Melkor left the Cretesian field commander's hastily re-erected tent just as the orange-tinted sun dipped below the hazy horizon. It had taken him nearly 10 minutes to convince the sentries that he was a member of the Fist, and another hour to keep the Cretesian military committee from packing up and retreating. Of course, he didn't teach them that the primal forces were real. Not yet. The mammoth herd he had explained away as a Bittermarchian trick. His own shadow antics to get rid of the beasts he had to feign ignorance of having even seen. Most importantly, however, he had argued that while they had lost the day, the war was not over. They still had a sufficient force of soldiers to accomplish their purpose, even if the task was now more difficult. During the night they would secrete a large force in the forest northwest of the city. The remaining Cretesian forces would line up as if for battle, but retreat quickly and bait the Bittermarchians out of Belshire. Once the Bittermarchians swarmed after them, the hidden army would flank them and commandeer their own fortifications. If successful, the Cretesians would likely have several days inside the city to prepare and resupply before the southern armies returned. But there was work to be done before the sun rose. After resupplying with weapons and ammunition, Melkor passed the sentries around the command tent and stepped around another crushed body on his way to inspect what was left of the Cretesian encampment. It looked like a mammoth had stepped square on the dead soldier's chest, snapping in two the rifle he had held. Melkor had long grown indifferent to corpses and gore, but it seemed odd that the devastation around him would arouse no feeling whatsoever, not anger, not disgust, not even surprise. Such was the power of the shadow that housed within him. It had taken a sheer force of will to restore order to the bewildered, demoralized army. The air still hung thick with dust, smoke and piteous moaning, and the stench of death assaulted his every intake of breath. But even the mounds of bloodied, broken bodies couldn't penetrate the utter deadness of his heart. He didn't even feel the proper rage for the perpetrator of the devastation, Davin Carver. The shadow had revealed the identity of the massive saber cat. Oddly, he missed the feeling of anger he should have felt. He missed the drive and focus the feeling gave him. Instead, there was just a list of what he had to do. Kill Davin Carver to secure the safety of the army, and kill Arianne Hightower to demoralize the Bittermarchians. The lovely Arianne Hightower. The thought of her struck an odd chord of emotion within him, the first since the shadow had taken him for its own. When the primal water had suffused him and the shadow was nothing more than a voice, it had promised to help him kill the queen in exchange for his aid in extinguishing the primal fire. As this aligned with his goals and those of his nation, he had agreed. But when he had knelt face to the fire, peering into the depths of the mystical eternal flame, the apathy that had been trained into him by his Fist commanders in Cretus had wavered. He had assassinated and tortured countless people with hardly a second thought. He had no close relations. The first assignment of any within the Fist was to assassinate any to whom they had strong ties. And he had done it, coldly and dispassionately. But there, in front of the eternal flame, he had felt that odd sentimentality that he thought no longer a part of his nature. He had remembered the soft embrace of his flaxen-haired mother after he had skinned his knee tripping over their grey cat, a memory he would have never recalled on his own. The wonderment that had struck him upon first hiking the eastern slopes of Icefire Mountains returned to his heart with redoubled force. And of all things, the stray thought of Lady Hightower's exquisite beauty had set him aflame with a passion and desire he had long suppressed and considered the realm of young fools. He had quashed these thoughts. He had tried to let the primal water loose upon its natural opposite, but Lady Hightower had burned it out of him, and the shadow had fled from her ignited hands. She had banished the shadow, had torn it out of the primal water with hardly any effort. It could not abide her light and her heat. The primal fire was the superior of the primal shadow. And at that thought, some feeling jabbed at his heart. What was it?
I sense a hope within you, the shadow said, voice castigating. Just because your army isn't completely annihilated is no cause for joy. Focus on what must be done.
He unstoppered the water skin he had confiscated from a corpse and drank deeply. By the time he had finished his meetings with the field commanders,
His raw, burned throat felt ill-used, despite the shadow's deadening effect on the pain. The lady's burned handprint on his neck was uncomfortable beneath the collar of his shirt, but even as injured as he was, the shadow's presence had freed him from exhaustion.
"You must find the queen," it commanded. "I can help you get into the city. The primal water is in there somewhere as well. If you can absorb it while I am with you, you will be formidable indeed."
Shouldn't he feel elated at the prospect of such power? He didn't. Gathering as much capability as he could was simply the logical thing to do.
"How do we find her?" Melkor asked. "She will be in hiding."
"One of my gifts is fear finding. I have roots and seeds in the dark soil of every heart. If you know what Ariane fears most, then I can sense her and lead you to her."
Melkor thought for a moment. What would a young queen faced with war fear most? The loss of her country? The loss of her own life? Perhaps she feared for Baron Carver, for it seemed clear now that the two cared for each other. Another strange feeling pricked his heart. He shoved it down and tried to put himself in her shoes, and the answer came to him as clear as day. Failure. Or even more specifically, the shame that Bittermarch had fallen to its foes, and she had lost it in her weakness. He relayed his thoughts to the shadow, and in moments he felt a connection, an odd tendril uncoiling from his heart, growing outward. But it didn't stretch to the city, it stretched into the wilderness to the northeast. Queen Ariane Hightower had quit Belshire. Wise? Yes. But head north? The choice was odd. Would she not instead flee south toward her army hastening to return home? But then came the connection, as if the tendril had struck into soil and knew what grew there and who did the gardening. It was indeed Ariane. Finding her would be easier than he thought. But again, the thought of her face stoked some fleeting fire in his heart that he couldn't quite identify.
"Do not gloat in your power," the shadow chastised. "We must hurry before she escapes our grasp."
Melkor focused his mind on the task at hand and angled his way around the massive corpse of one of the mammoths that the Cretesians had managed to fell. He walked toward the edges of the encampment where the destruction was relatively light. While he doubted the queen had a large guard around her for a stealthy trip north, he would gather soldiers to deal with whatever protection she had. How many would he need? In the end, he settled on 50. And while none of the soldiers he had picked appeared enthusiastic about marching off into the countryside at the onset of evening, they all knew better than to cross a member of the Fist. Before the quarter moon had risen above the tips of the Icefire Mountains, they set off, finding the road toward Harwickshire an hour later. While Melkor could see, without difficulty, he had to allow his nearly blinded companions lanterns so they could move with enough speed to overtake their quarry. He could sense Ariane moving slowly ahead of them. Another 2 hours, and they would catch them. If they could keep pace, he would have the Lady Hightower and maybe even Davon Carver in his sights well before midnight. Again the nagging feeling when he thought of her. The shadow thought it gloating, or some hope for his army, but it was something else. It was something in his soul, his heart. Something that rebelled against the utter apathy the shadow had used to displace every feeling. Then the ephemeral feeling became a nagging idea, and while he hiked into the forest, the nagging idea became a risky plan. Davon stumbled over a root and caught himself before he fell, stirring up a ruckus among the dried leaves and snapping branches. Weariness had settled into his bones, the stirring dark of the elder wood calling for him to rest from days of running and toil. But he couldn't, not yet. He had to get Ariane far enough away from the city that no one could track and find her. His unsettled mind couldn't stop reliving the harrowing memory of the shadow form that had driven the mammoth away. How far would Ariane need to go to be safe from such a thing? He only had his fear by which to gauge the distance, but whatever he felt, they would have to stop soon. He wasn't the only one on the verge of falling face first to the forest floor. He chanced a glance behind him. While his vision was good enough to see, the rest of his party were forced to make their way double file by the light of 3 hunks of glowing blue moss. Even Key's lively gait had dwindled to little better than a shuffle, and Ariane, leaned heavily on her sister, or perhaps it was the other way round. The soldiers fared best, but it had been a long day for everyone. After a few more minutes of plodding, he stopped. A trio of elder oak formed a broad clearing next to a noisy stream that splashed against granite rocks and deadfall. The water would cover the noise of their camp and provide them refreshment, but he would need to find a way to cross the stream before he could rest. The group caught up to him and stopped. "We'll rest here," he said, earning a chorus of gratitude in return. "A very king-like decision," Mr. Goodwin quipped. Davin still couldn't get used to the man's youthful appearance, but he would rip his limbs off if he didn't quit teasing him about Ariane's very unfortunate revelation about the Queen's will. What was Philippa thinking? She knew what his reputation was. Even more, he was sure she knew how much he hated politics. Bitterly, he realized that Philippa had carefully calculated that his love for Ariane would outweigh his objections. And as the exhausted Lady Hightower walked over and took his arm, he knew the dead queen was right. How could he ever give her up? But how could he lead a nation of people that thought him the worst sort of noble imaginable? "I feel like such a coward," Ariane said. "It's been nagging me for hours. I should be back in the city. I know staying alive is the right thing to do, but it feels wrong." He slipped his arm around her waist. It still felt strange to take such a liberty, the newness of her touch exhilarating. "It may feel wrong to you," he said, "but it feels right to me. I want you as far away from guns and cannons as I can get you." "Your Majesty?" Mr. Goodwin said.
"Yes," Ariane answered.
"I meant Baron Carver," Mr. Goodwin returned. Davin glowered at him, but Ariane's smile persuaded him not to be too angry. If Mr. Goodwin's annoying humour could keep her spirits up, then so be it. "What is it, Mr. Goodwin?" he asked.
"I was wondering if we might light a small fire," he said. "It is a bit cold and will get colder."
"No," Davin answered. "We will be too easy to find. Have everyone huddle together. I've got to scout around to find a way across this stream. I'll return shortly."
"Well," Mr. Goodwin said, "if we're to cram together like fish in the market, at least we all smell of mint."
Mr. Goodwin returned to Elaine's side. The odd man had watched over her for the entire journey, and Davin wondered at his devotion to Ariane's sister. It was clear that something about her had struck him, and Davin reminded himself to ask about it later.
"You won't be too long, will you?" Ariane said, squeezing his hand.
"I don't think so," he answered. "There's almost always an obliging branch that has fallen across the water, or a nice set of stones. I'll be back before you know it."
"Ki?"
The Aoa Katan woman walked over, spear in hand, and the carved snowfinch perched on her shoulder.
"This is a good spot, brown man," she said, "but we are trapped against the stream."
"I know," he said. "I'm going to find a way over. Stay with the Lady Hightower, please, until I return."
She nodded, and Davin embraced Ariane again before transforming into a saber cat and padding away upstream. They had travelled close to the base of the Ice Fire Mountains on purpose. While the way was more difficult, it was littered with massive red granite boulders and deadfall that provided 100 places to hide. The weak light of the crescent moon slanted downward through irregular breaks in the canopy, and as he followed the stream upward, birds and large animals scurried away unseen in the undergrowth. Dire wolves and short-faced bear lived in the woods, but he felt confident that one roar from his mighty throat would send them running should the need arise. About a half a mile up, he found what he wanted, a desiccated elder oak that had cracked in half and fallen over the fern-lined stream, and to his surprise, he saw that the natural bridge had been used to cross the stream before. By the distinct imprint of hide-covered feet on the soft mud, at the edge of the water, the tracks were from Aoa Katan feet in soft leather boots. The North people travelled in Bittermarch more than he had thought. Satisfied, he reversed his course to head back to camp when his sensitive nose picked up on a scent that was out of place. It was to the north of them and distant, and he couldn't quite put together what it was. Moss? Blood? Decay? The moss was certainly everywhere. He stopped for a moment to listen and smell, attuning his ears and sucking in a lungful of air through his nose. The scent seemed to fade, but another smell drifted his way from the direction of their camp, unwashed and unscented bodies. Cretesian soldiers, he was sure of it. But how had they found them? It was impossible. Casting aside his exhaustion, he roared into the night and sprang away.